This is the Dungeon Master's Handbook. Hi, everyone. It's Michael, and welcome to the next episode of Dungeon Master's Handbook. It's going to be a quick and a call-in episode. It's November 13th when I'm recording this, and I'm actually recording this out in my garage, so we'll see how the sound quality is. I'm recording on my cell phone as usual. I don't have the space or ability to do a professional podcaster setup, so yeah, you get what you get. I've been pretty busy. Let's see. I've been, finishing up unpacking from the moving. In October, I had Gamehole Con. I was doing some painting of the house, other things like that. Getting ready for the upcoming deer season, which we're now in the middle of. So, busy and just kind of one of those. I didn't have much to say, and I'm not a regular content provider. I kind of do it when I feel it. So this episode is to answer some call-ins from Jason, from a new caller, and then from Minion, Rob. So let's get started with Jason of Nerds RPG Variety Cast.
Hey, Michael, Jason here. Sorry to let you down on the topics for OSR October. I think you picked up a great one. I mean, I try to highlight, the positive forces in the hobby and look at some of the great products that are out there and point people to things they might not be aware of in the OSR sphere. Very smart, avoiding the topic of what is the OSR. It's very contentious, and I think it's counterproductive to continue that argument from either side of it. I think OSR ultimately is going to, it's been used by so many different people for so many different things, and it is what it is, but you know what you consider OSR. I know what I consider OSR, and, so do other people. And so maybe look for, don't just look at the tag OSR, but actually pay a little bit of attention to the product, what it's compatible with, or what they're espousing when you're looking at products. But, yeah, I try to point out products and neat things. I'm going to talk to some creators in the OSR sphere and just try to point out why people may want to try that playstyle if they haven't done that playstyle before. So that's kind of what I'm doing for OSR October. Sounds like the move is going well. I'm glad to hear that. Moving's never fun, but hey, you've got a house with a trap door, so that's pretty fun. Anyhow, I will talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Hey, Jason, thanks for that call-in. Appreciate it. I am sorry it took a month or more to reply to you. I've been busy. I just wanted to say thank you. You do good work highlighting products, and I really appreciate that you did that for OSR October. I am the worst person to highlight new products. I don't buy them. So thank you for what you do, because I know that's a valuable service, and I know a lot of people appreciate knowing what's going on in the RPG world. Regarding my own introducing people into the old school style of playing, I'm hoping that when things get quiet for me in early 2024, after deer season, before turkey season and camping season and all that stuff, I'm hoping to run a marathon at one of the local gaming stores in the far northwest Illinois, or maybe the northeast Iowa corner, maybe in Dubuque. There's a couple of game stores there. And I'd like to do an old school D&D marathon like I've had done in Chicago back in the day. That's where I'll sit down from the moment the store opens until they close, and I'll run a module, something, like B1 or In Search of the Unknown, or B2, Keeping the Borderlands, maybe X1, Isle of Dread. Because those are all nice games where people can drop in, play, and then get up and leave, and someone can come and take over their pre-generated character. And that's exactly what the way I do it. Maybe I should put that on a podcast episode later on about running marathons. But anyway, I think I'm going to do that, and we'll see what happens. I like introducing people to the old school way of playing, and I find that running these marathons is kind of a fun thing. Plus, if I can get folks to sponsor maybe dice or some sort of freebie kind of thing, it gets them involved and gets them excited. Hey, you played D&D for an hour and you survived. Here's a pair of dice, something like that. Anyway, yes, the trapdoor is so awesome. I have a legitimate trap. For those of you that are listening, I have a legitimate trapdoor that leads down to my basement, and it looks something straight out of a scary horror movie. Everyone loves that creepy view and the deep stairs down into the darkness, whoa, kind of thing. But we're getting the stairs redone because they're really uncomfortable to walk down. So it won't be as scary, but there still will be the trap doors, so that's cool. All right, and next we have Bosman Boz of the Border Baronies blog, who's calling in about my episode 61, OD&D and Holmes. So Bosman Boz, take it away.
Good morning, Michael. I was listening to your episode on the difference between OD&D and Holmes, and I think I can help you a bit regarding what you said about I don't know where the 9-point alignment came from, because I just wrote a blog post about this myself. I found an old copy of the Strategic Review, particularly the one from February 76. In which Gygax says he thinks that the original alignment system he made was a mistake. And in that article, he argues for a 5-point alignment system with chaotic good, lawful good, chaotic evil, lawful evil, and neutral. So while it's not actually the 9-point alignment system yet, I think it's a good a transitory step between the original 3-point alignment system and what we would see later on in AD&D. Hope this might help you in some way.
Hey, thank you very much for sending that to me. That was sent to me by email. And Bosman, I'm sorry it took me so long to answer you back. So, Strategic Review, February 1976. I think that that is such an interesting historical article where you get to see Gary talk about the rules of OD&D. As he's going through this churn of the Three Little Brown Books and Greyhawk, and how he's really trying to figure out the rules for himself, and you see part of that with him talking about his struggles with alignment. So I think that's kind of cool, and it's a reminder that as much as we like to think that everything kind of sprang forth and there was just this natural progression, there really wasn't. It was quite a chaotic, from what I pick up from reading things written by Gary and others, it was a chaotic kind of assembly of D&D and how it grew in fits and starts, and depending on what was input and what people's experiences were. I'm gonna put a link to Bosman Boz's post on alignment. I think it's a really neat analysis that actually dives into the works of Cicero and his writings on natural law and how you can apply that to D&D alignment. I thought that was kind of fascinating. For me, I've always found law and chaos to be metaphysical and elemental, and really just the realm of clerics and deities. For everyone else, they're pretty much neutral, maybe trending towards lawful, but so anyway, thanks again for the call. And next we have, surprise, surprise, Jason again.
Hey Michael, Jason here. Enjoyed the Infinite Barrel of Monkeys episode. That's a great way of going through and adapting modules for your campaign and your groups. Really enjoyed it. And I look forward to a future episode where you take a module and do this with that module to show folks step by step. Thank you so much for continuing to put out good content and staying positive. It's really appreciated. Take care. Talk to you soon.
Jason, you are my first SpeakPipe user. Thank you very much. I'm glad to know it works. Thank you for that comment. I'm thinking actually about doing a Dark Suns or Dragonlance module as a way of showing how I take a module and break it down and essentially turn it into a sandbox kind of setting. What would you advise? You know, I'd really like to take something that is viewed as a railroady module and turn it into something that isn't a railroad. Do you have any suggestions? And anyone else that's listening, what would you suggest I use as a module to convert from railroading into an infinite barrel of monkeys? I'd be interested in knowing. Maybe I'll actually buy a product. Anyway, Jason, thanks again. And last but not least, we have Rob Menyon from a Wee Timorous Bushy podcast.
Hey, Michael, this is Rob, also known as Menyon, calling from Confessions of a Wee Timorous Bushy. Thank you for your very interesting episode on the Infinite Barrel of Monkeys. What I had in mind actually was something a little bit more drastic than what you seem to be considering. Your idea actually is a very thoughtful like deconstruction of the module and then rebuilding it in a way that makes sense to the individual DM, which is a fantastic idea. I thought you were going more towards just using bits and pieces from various modules and pulling out the ones that most fit your campaign or adventure, and you know, dealing with material that way, you know, using a map you like, using an encounter you like, that kind of thing. Yeah, you've seem to have gone more for deconstruction of the adventure and then breaking down the adventure into its component, what you as the individual DM sees as the key elements of the adventure, and then reconstructing it in a way that suits your campaign style and the way that the adventure unfolds at the table, which is obviously that's a brilliant idea. Probably better than just sort of ripping bits out of adventures. I think I need a little bit more time to think about this, though. But again, thank you so much for the episode, and I hope to continue this conversation a little bit more.
Hey, Rob, thanks for that call. To be fair, I do exactly that as well as what you suggest. I steal lots of bits and pieces from modules and use them. In fact, one of the ones that made a huge impact in my game was I stole from the old Goodman Dungeon Crawl Classics module number 2, The Lost Vault of Zath-Zar-Ro. This became the setting for my AD&D campaign. Really major events happened there. Players got to know some very interesting bits and prevent a dark one from entering into the world. And that was a module written for 3E. So I very much stripped it of all of its 3E parts and kept the map and kept the bits and pieces and went forward with it. The deconstruction I've done more for other modules. So one is X2, Castle Amber. Now, Castle Amber was written in kind of a pseudo, I don't want to say it was a railroad, but it's definitely a linear kind of game where it assumed that you were going to take a particular path through the module. And I don't want to give any other spoilers, but I definitely, you know, stripped it down and redid things so that it was more of a standalone. The players could come at it with a lot of different solutions. And I've done that also for, T1 Village of Hamlet. I talked about that. And I'm also going to do it for the T2 Temple of Elemental Evil, when I eventually get back to getting around to designing my my war game slash RPG interpretation of the whole Temple of Elemental Evil game set. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. And as I had mentioned to Jason's, or an answer to Jason earlier, if you have a suggestion for a particular module that you'd like to see me deconstruct, let me know. I'd be really curious. All right, so that's it. Thank you to all my call-ins. That was Jason from Nerds RPG Variety Cast twice, Bosman Boz of the Border Baronies blog, and Menyon Rob of a Wee Timorous Bushi podcast. If you would like to reach out, leave a comment, or just say hi, there's the ways to do it in my show notes, and likewise, feel free to email me or reach out to me on Mastodon. So until next time, game on.